Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, I'm Steph and welcome to the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. This is the last of our Lost for Words episode and we've dealt with some really tough experiences, but for this one we're talking about something that is a real mix of happy, joy, times and tough bits, and that's motherhood, specifically for new mums. I have to be really honest, I've written and spoken about it a fair bit. When I had babies, and especially with my first, it came as quite a shock. How consuming it was, how out of control I felt, and just I had no idea what I was doing, which I've since realised is completely normal, because why and how would you know? We talk about motherhood being the most natural thing in the world. You see new mums especially having to say, it's so great, I'm so lucky, and they are, and it is. That almost goes without saying, I think, but if you're not allowed to actually say as well, I don't know what I'm doing, or even I'm not enjoying this or cherishing every moment, it's actually quite dangerous, because someone who is struggling might be left feeling really isolated. So this episode will hopefully offer some support to women who are in that phase, or remind people who are out of that phase what it can feel like. And also some of it's really funny, like when you have no idea what you're doing, it can also be funny. My guests today are Illy Morrison, who is Mixing Up Motherhood on Instagram, and Sophie McCartney, or Tired and Tested as she's known. Illy trained as a midwife and now works in birth debrief with her book, The Birth Debrief, coming out on 16th March. She's got two kids and her youngest is 11 months old. And Sophie is a comedian. She's written two books. The first was Sunday Times bestseller and is available in Don't Buy Her Flowers packages. And the second is her first fiction novel and it's due out in March. We have a right old romp through early motherhood, starting with birth, guilt about pretty much everything, how the early weeks feel, breastfeeding, sweaty weigh-ins. We talk about feeling like a failure, and expectations and comparison with other mums. And we also talk about how babies impact your relationship with your partner. Illy and Sophie were excellent guests, very natural and honest with everything that they shared. I'd like to thank Natural Mat for sponsoring this series, who hand make organic beds and mattresses in Devon, and I'll tell you more about them in a bit, but you can get 15% off your first Natural Mat order with the code DBHF15. So on with the episode, which will hopefully offer some support to anyone who has more recently become a new mum, or who beats themselves up for not being the mum they thought they'd be, because none of us are. The reason I wanted to talk to you both is just obviously you both have quite small babies. You're back in that new mum phase. And I think we've done a series that we're talking about. We've been talking about some quite serious kind of things, like with grief and baby loss and cancer. But also I think new mums have been sometimes kind of neglected. It's meant to be a really joyous time, we're meant to get on with it, and it is all those things, but it's also really tough. And you both, obviously, kind of your life's work seems to be about letting mums know it's okay, and if they're feeling not great, and being able to laugh at it maybe, or being able to help with advice. So that's kind of why I really wanted to talk to you both. But I thought if maybe just start with your kind of setup, like how many kids you've both got and what you do, that would be really helpful.
So I am a midwife and I don't practice clinically anymore. I practice in sort of the realm of trauma and overcoming trauma. And I am a soon to be published author, which is bonkers. And I also have two children, Ihsan, who is 4, and Talha, who turns 1 on the 1st of March. So
you've nearly done it. You've nearly made that first year.
And do you know what it is? With the first one, that first year is like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. With the second one, it goes so fast, but I still think it's like, I'm still celebrating. Yes, I did the first year because I've done it again, and with two. So you know, I think it's, we're nearly there.
Yeah. Sophie?
Do you know what? It's awful. I keep forgetting that I've got three children.
Yes, I hear you.
When people ask me how many children I have, and like, they're like, tell me about your kids. And I go, I've got two.
It's when you have to remember their birthdays. Like if you're filling out a form and it's like three birthdays, that's a lot of dates to remember.
It is. It's a lot. So my eldest, Jack, he is 9, nearly 10. I'm sad about that because I think as soon as we go into that double figures, I'm just going to have it's going to be a sob fest, isn't it? Just need to deep breathe my way through it. And then I've got Evelyn, who's 7, but is basically 25. The difference between boys and girls, I mean, people warned me at the time about the difference, but I was like, well, how can two people that have come from the same place be just so different? But it's actually incredible to just see that. Yeah, see that. So Evelyn's 7. And then I've got little Nate, who is 5 months tomorrow. And I guess in terms of like what I do, I always find it really hard to sum up easily what I do. I kind of go with just a broad spectrum comedian. It's kind of my life mission to make people laugh and kind of feel a little bit better about themselves. But I also write. So I've got a book.
A number one Sunday Times best-selling book.
Thanks. They're labours of love, aren't they? They're like different kinds of children, I think, when you write books. So there's that one. And then I've got another one coming out that I wrote while I was pregnant and then had to postpone a little bit because I birthed my child a little bit too early. And so then had to carry on writing. I gave myself 2 weeks postpartum to rock in a corner and then had to carry on writing. I don't recommend that. No one ever does, do they?
Lots of people do it and then they go like, oh yeah, it was dreadful.
That was awful. Writing a book, such a wonderful experience. It was awful. Don't do it.
Seriously, I say to people regularly, I'm like, toughest thing I've ever done. And both of my children. And the thing is, when I was writing my book, it was supposed to come out in February 2022. And my mum passed away just unexpectedly on Boxing Day of 2021. And I was 6 months pregnant and I couldn't get my head in the game. And I was like, no, I can't be doing this. Like, I just can't be doing this. And so it's just like, put it off and put it off.
That's really good that you did say, I can't do this. Because I bet you people have battled through and tried to do it and then just felt awful.
And it's mad because between grief and postpartum, like the brain is just like, what are you trying to say? Or what are you trying to do here? Like, it's just not happening. And actually, it's been the best thing to ever happen because what's come from it is like fully what I would describe as my masterpiece. So it's what I wanted to write and wouldn't have been able to produce then. So it's like, okay, cool. That's fine. Yeah. It's silver lining.
You've given yourself that little bit of a breather space. And I guess then you can kind of take a step away from it and then look at it again with fresh eyes.
I salute you for going back and doing it again. I've already told my publishing team, I'm like, I'm not doing it again. Don't call me, don't text me, don't at me. I'm not doing it.
I was going to ask you about how you're feeling right now. So we've got an 11-month-old and a 5-month-old, nearly 5-month-old. How's the sleep? And are you obsessed with sleep? My youngest is 5 and I'm still obsessed with sleep. But it started from having kids, right?
Do you know,
I feel like sleep is, we all talk about sleep because it's just a very mutual talking point. Like we all know that the others are going to have something to say about sleep. So it becomes this like, how are you? Yeah, have you got kids? How are you sleeping? And you'll either like relate on the answer or be like, well, you're a dick because you're getting full night's sleep.
So,
it's kind of like a, we'll either unite in our sleeplessness I'm going to go find someone else who's as tired as me.
So you can bitch in a corner.
Exactly. I think with us, oh man, like the romanticization of co-sleeping is bonkers to me. Like we co-sleep for ease, but not for comfort. Like the way this child occupies the bed is out of order. Like
starfish.
Oh my gosh. Like literally. And it's like, if you roll onto his foot, even a tiny bit, well, then he's up. Then that's it. Well, you've ruined it. So I'm like at the edge of the bed like this the whole night. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because the bar is fully in hell when it comes to sleep because I'm like, oh my God, got 3 hours last night. Yes.
Do you know what makes me laugh? Like pre-kids, if you'd had maybe like 2 or 3 hours sleep, you'd be like, oh, I'm so tired. You can't function, can you, the next day? Like, oh, but now you get 2 to 3 hours unbroken sleep. I'm like, oh my God, I got 2 hours last night unbroken. I'm going to go and do something today. I feel so refreshed.
When my first was like, I don't know, at some point I got like a 4-hour stint. I was like, oh my
new
God.
Woman. It's like, new yeah, woman, 4 hours.
It's like, it's good. And no one else is functioning on this little sleep. Well, that's what it feels like. It's
yeah,
mad.
Yeah. It's the best thing, that 4-hour stretch when they go through for the first time, and then the panic as you wake up as well, don't you? Because they haven't woken up to wake you up, and you're like,
also, how can I recreate this? How can I make this exact setting? And it's not, because there's no predictability to it.
And the thing is, you'll go, okay, so he did have dinner at 6:15, and it did have this. Okay, so if I do this, then and shh, now make noise, the white noise, shh, and I'll step out, and they're like, nah, mate, like, I don't care.
Yeah, the best place that Nate has ever slept was in this awful soft play place that we went to for my daughter's birthday. And it was filled with maybe 60 kids all screaming their heads off. And he was just like, bliss. And he slept like an absolute lamb for about 4 hours in everybody's arms. Just happy as. Put him in his little carry cot to sleep downstairs in our house in the absolute quiet. No. I'm just going to scream until you bounce me around the house. Then I'll shut up. They're funny little things, aren't they?
It is obsessional. So I was going to ask you both to go right back to when you had your first babies, because I think what I really want to remember or ask you, I suppose, what did you feel like and what did you think you were supposed to feel like, Sophie?
I was absolutely shell-shocked. So I was 28 when I had my first, and none of my friends had had babies. I was the first one out of everybody to have them. So I didn't have any kind of peer group to go to and go, oh my God, did this happen to you? I had nobody to share that experience with. And I'd done the NCT classes, but I hadn't really particularly gelled with my group and stuff, you know, and I know lots of people do. They do those groups, don't they, to get their kind of friendship network. But again, I was the youngest in the group, and I just kind of felt a bit like, I don't know. I just didn't feel that connection. So when I had Jack, I actually had a bit of a traumatic one with him. I ended up being knocked out with the general anaesthetic. Yeah, it was a horrible experience. And I felt like I grieved his birth almost in a way, because it wasn't what I expected it would be, as birth generally isn't, is it? I mean, when people always say about birth plans now, I have a little lulls and I go, oh. Yeah, okay. Take a birth plan if you want, but be prepared to rip it up, because, you know, sadly, it doesn't always go that way, does it? And so I'd had a difficult one with him, and because my husband had been thrown out of the room and I was unconscious and I felt like nobody had been with him when he was born. And I felt like a real kind of separation. I literally woke up. We didn't know what sex that we were having either. So I woke up in a room. Somebody thrust this baby at me and went, it's a boy. And I was like, oh, just that really disassociated from it. And then I really struggled in the first kind of few weeks and months afterwards. You know, I don't think I would go as far as saying I had postnatal depression. I don't think that I did. I think it was probably just a period of adjustment and me getting my head around what had happened. It's like expectation versus reality, isn't it? And what I thought it would go down. I had to delete every episode of One Born Every Minute from I'd had on the Virgin Box. I was like, no, I just couldn't. It sounds awful now looking back at it, but I couldn't stand to hear other people talking about their really happy birth experience. Yeah, so for my first few months, I had a real kind of bedding in period of being a new mum, dealing with kind of, I guess, the slight trauma of what had happened for his birth, and not knowing anybody else that had babies. And I don't think I probably left the house for the first 4 or 5 months. I think I just sat in pajamas going, oh my gosh, what is this? And, you know, actually retrospectively, he was a really easy, lovely baby, because then my daughter came along and she was, wow, something else. But so I had it easy with him. I just didn't really appreciate it at the time. But I just remember looking out of my living room window one day, and I was sitting there, I was holding him, and I saw a woman walking down the road with her baby in a pram, and she had the bag on. She was obviously out for the day. I'm thinking, why can't I get out for the day? And I felt trapped in the house, and I was so jealous that other people could just seem to get themselves up and out and get on with their lives. And I just felt really isolated and like I just wasn't doing it properly. So, I mean, that was the first one. I mean, skip to the third one. I mean, we still haven't really left the house, but I'm like, I don't really care now. It's easier. It's fine. We don't go anywhere, but I'm not sweating in soft play places. It's fine.
How about you, Illy?
With my first, it's interesting because I think I was 26, and I was just like, yeah, you've got it all together. Like, you know, midwife, I'd looked after like hundreds of women. I knew what I was doing, and against medical advice, only because I had a slightly higher BMI at the time. and I had something called low Pape, but actually in the trust I was working in London, they were like, your Pape levels are fine. But the trust in Norwich was like, we don't like this. I played the system, not recommending this, by the way, but like I basically hopped between two trusts and was like avoiding extra scans and stuff because I didn't want them. And then was like, I'm going to have a home birth because I was like, of course I'm going to have a home birth. And at the time we were living with my mum and I was like, wicked, like, that's fine. And ended up going from a home birth to an emergency cesarean section and had like a real period of adjustment that was just like, what do you mean? And I think because I'd placed such a high expectation on being okay, on having it together, on knowing what I was doing, mm-hmm. and the reality of that not happening was just wild to me. And I think a lot of processing postnatally is impacted by shame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shame impacts all of our experiences and it manifests itself in like guilt and things like that, but it is at the core of a lot of it is shame. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'd like louded it up and said, you know, I'm gonna do this, even to like the doctors. I was just like, anyway, bye. And the reality was so different. And then struggling with breastfeeding, and you know, breastfeeding took a while with Ihsan to kind of like just get it right. And again, that shame comes into it, because how many women had I been like, take the baby, nose to nipple, da 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 da, rugby hold, et cetera, et cetera. And then my own baby, I felt so cack-handed and just could not get this like severely tongue-tied baby to just get on my tit. Like it was just like, are you having a laugh? And it took like 3 weeks for her to get back up to birth weight. And I refused to give formula, not because I've got anything against formula, but because for me, I was like, you failed at this birth. You are not going to fail at this thing. And I do think that
pressure
for a lot of people is a result of trauma that you kind of are like, well, I didn't get that right, but I'm going to get this right. So you double down on something else that you that's tangible. So you put yourself through all sorts, like, you know, bleeding nipples, you're like pumping, topping up, this, that and the other, this regimented thing, because you're like, I'm getting this thing right. It becomes an obsession.
Well, I remember one of my NCT group had a hospital pump, like they'd loaned her one of those industrial pumps, and this was our first baby, so like I couldn't have gone, oh, don't be ridiculous, I had no idea what would work. They advised her to feed, like latch feed, then in 45 minutes pump with this industrial pump, and then 45 minutes later feed again. And this, and you know, like that can't be good for
it's
anybody,
not sustainable.
No, like, but also she was so broken, like she
just attached either to a baby or a pump the whole time. You just
and the
caught
thing
in
is,
the cycle, aren't you?
I remember sitting there just like this, and like, that fucking medulla, and it's going
like this. Like it's Amstrad.
Oh my god. And the thing is, right, the noise is like yes, 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 pumping, 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 and then you look and you go,
oh, I've got 10 mils.
Like literally it would drive me bonkers. When I managed to take this girl to the clinic, get her weight, they said she's exactly at birth weight, do you want to come back next week? I was like, do I fuck, like, I'm not coming back next week.
Oh no, yeah, she's like, good, yeah,
see you later, we're not doing it again. And I never weighed her again, because I was like, you just don't need that.
The weigh-in clinics, oh my, because Buster was 4 weeks early and was underweight and lost weight, and I was just so stressed by the weigh, but the weigh-ins were so sweaty, and there'd be women visibly crying around the room, you know, because they're all going, oh god, I'm getting it wrong, I'm getting it wrong. Awful, so lonely.
And it's just like a way to really undermine your intuition, but to undermine your ability and your kind of, to just ruin your experience. For me, I don't know, like people are like, what centile was your son? I was like, I don't freaking know.
The centile.
Like the centiles, the weights. I have not weighed him. I've not weighed either of my children. I just don't care. Like I was like, do you know what, Eileen? It doesn't serve you. So you just can't do this. And I'm just like, look at them. Are they okay? Are you feeding them? You know, trust that. And actually my son is tiny compared to my daughter, and everyone sees him. My mother-in-law the other day was like, Eileen, are you feeding this child? I was like, no, it's a new thing. We don't do that.
Did you have the whole weigh-in stuff, Sophie? Did you feel
I did. So I've experienced both ends of the spectrum. So when Jack was born, so thus my emergency cesarean that I'd been knocked out for, he was 10 pound 10. So he was, it's most people's response. So he was not coming. And I'm, you know, I know that, you know, I don't think it necessarily, you know, Ellie, you'll know better than me. It doesn't really depend on your size, if you can get a big baby out or not. But all the women in my family have struggled with anything over about eight pounds. I don't know whether we've got little pelvises. I don't know. But he was not coming out of me au naturel. Mm. So he was 10 pounds 10. So when he came out, we didn't have to go to the weigh-ins. Everyone was like, he's fine. He was on the 99th centile. He was like, oh, yeah, came out. Rolls well, for days. All right, let's get out of the pub. And then Evelyn, she was an emergency cesarean. I tried a VBAC for her. And just not go well for me. I cannot birth babies that way. And so she came out, she was about 8 pounds, so she was fine. And then Nate was 3 weeks early, but he was 8 pounds, but 3 weeks early. So he was a decent size, but then he had reflux, and I've not really experienced this with the other two. And so he came out, I think he was on the 75th, he must have been when he came out. He was on the 75th centile. And after his first weigh-in, they go down, don't they? And he'd not got back to birth weight. And so that we'd been flagged as not going back to birth weight. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'd been noticing how much he was being sick. So we kind of struggled on for a little bit longer. And then the health visitor came back. She's like, I'm not happy to let you go. So we're going to have to keep coming back. But he was going down through the centiles.
The stress of that.
It is. And even for me, as an experienced mum, baby, I was in bits. And, you know, he was happy. He was not. And to look at him, because he was 8 pounds when he was born, it wasn't like he was a little baby. Mm. You know, it wasn't like he was a teeny little preemie baby. He was, you know, he was a unit still for, you know, 3 weeks early. And so, but yeah, he did. So in the end, we got kind of fast tracked through for the GP. He was put on omeprazole for his reflux. I'm now dairy free, soy free,
joy free.
Oh, absolutely.
I just had to put that in there because it is.
It is. The health assistant said to me, well, we'll try dairy free. We'll try soy free. And if they don't work, we'll go wheat free, we'll go gluten free. And I was like, there's nothing left.
The bread.
So that kind of got that under control. And actually now he's below his original centile. He sits just below the 50th. But we saw a consultant and he said, well, to be honest, he said, we see it all the time. The baby's born, they come out at an elevated birth rate, an elevated centile, and then they just fall into their groove as long as they're following a curve.
It's another thing that it becomes an obsession a bit, doesn't it? Especially with that first baby, and it's the comparison. Yeah, the comparison with other people. And then you kind of, I suppose, I've got a 12-year-old, so I can say now that you look at like his rugby team and they're all different sizes, especially at this age, because some are going through puberty and like, hello, you know, oh my God, that's a man. And others are really like that's just where they're meant to be for most of them. And I think it's very hard to compute that when you're at home. And also it's that back to that same as, well, my job was to give birth. My job is to feed, whether that's breastfeeding or bottle. It's like, that's what I've got to do. So if their weight's out, you're like, oh God, I'm not able to do this.
Just so much of early motherhood is just you feeling like an absolute failure.
It continues on, you know, when it comes to weaning. Like, I bloody hate weaning. Like, I hated it the first time, hating it the second time. Can't stand it.
Third time was easier because it was like, I haven't got the energy to... Like, chew on this. And then he...
Have a sausage.
Yeah.
You're good. You're fine.
But again, it's that expectation. I was like, I have to take something out of this, like what I need to do. Whereas with the first ones it was pureeing and like doing it all really, really carefully.
I remember just looking and being like, it's all on the floor again. How much did you even eat? Like the waste and the tidying, oh my gosh, like it would, you know, that would drive me bonkers. And now with Talha, I'm just like, did you eat this morning? I don't really remember. Are you okay? Yeah, you're fine. Okay, then let's keep it moving. You know, like I can't do that to myself the second time because I know that I'm meeting his needs. I know that I am. So it's like, do you know what? When I see people on that Instagram and they've got like shiny little meals, there's one person that I follow and I look at what she does and I'm like, what do you do for the rest of your day then? Like, how do you get anything done? And it's not even like taking the piss, but it's like, wow, like, you know, this is like a gourmet meal for this child, like, you know, four different things all on plates, which are really nice. And then they touch. She's like, oh, she's exploring. You know, she wants to see the texture, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, put it in your mouth. keep it moving.
It becomes something though, like that comparison and competition, doesn't it? Where you hear someone like, and they probably don't mean to, like, it's, and it's not even necessarily, because some kids just do and some don't, like with what they eat. And I can see it with my three, that they're all really different. But it will be like, well, yeah, they love olives, or they love broccoli, or that you, like, you choose something that everyone else's kid is poking about.
Yeah.
And it makes you think, oh God, I'm doing this wrong. But again, they get to an age where they eat it or they don't, you know.
And everyone's fine. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what comes with the second child onwards. I joked before about Evelyn with, well, a sausage. So when I was weaning her, at that point, Jack was four. So to be honest, I wasn't going to make life more difficult for myself. She just had a smaller version of whatever he was having for tea. And if that happened to be a fish finger, well, that's just got a little bit mashed up. I look back and think, oh my goodness, I would have never done that for my first. No. He didn't have chocolate, I don't think, until he was two. Same. I think I've got a picture of Evelyn holding a bag of buttons when she was about 11 months old, like, hey! You just relax into it. I think you're just so scared that food might hurt them. And if it's not organic, something awful is going to happen. It's like, well, they're just little versions of you. It's fine. You know, you're not going to, it's not like a dog, it's not like you can't have chocolate, they'll die. You know, it's just another human, it's just a smaller version. I think, you know, I think people overthink the weaning process. Just give them something to eat, they'll be fine. Yeah.
Well, even the name weaning is like, I remember being with my NCT group and someone saying something about weaning, and I was like, I don't know what that is. And like going home and looking up, it's like, oh, giving them food. Yeah.
Giving them food. Eating. Yeah, it's chewing.
And I think as well, you know, we just get caught up in comparison in every area. And, you know, considering my work now, where I work with people who are overcoming birth trauma or support them to, I'm just like, let's break this down. Let's like reframe this, because we always want to find things to blame ourselves for, because everything feels like our responsibility. So even, you know, we think, I could have birthed differently, I could have changed this, I could have. It's like, but could you? And when you ask yourself that question back, you're like, oh, actually, yeah. Can you force feed a child? No, you can't. Can you offer it? Yes.
And do you want to spend your day doing that as well? Like,
and then do you want to blame yourself? Yeah. Like, really, you know, actually, there's only so much we can control and so much that we should feel guilty for, because otherwise there are things that we couldn't have changed. So what's the point in the shame and the guilt?
And did you feel a pressure to kind of get back, and whether that's body or brain or getting out? Like, I feel like you always remember celebrities that have babies at the same time as you.
Yeah,
I remember seeing Rochelle Humes, one of her kids was born at the same time as one of mine, and they were on date night 2 weeks after having a baby, looking great, like, just
amazing.
Great. But I'm at home literally tit out, like greasy, like just feeling really fat, like all the stuff, and just seeing, how are they doing that?
Kate Middleton had her children round about the same.
God.
Around the same time that I had my first and the second. It's perfect. The same age gap. Yeah, something to aspire to. And do you know what? I actually still really feel very sorry for Kate for having to. Can you imagine anything worse? Then however many hours after you've just had a child to just, like, somebody just, like, put a dress and makeup on you and, like, push outside and you've got to just smile for the world. I'd just be absolutely terrified that all of my insides were sliding down my legs towards the floor. Like, that's what happened for me. Wearing my big socks up to her knees, just absorbing all the blood that's coming down. It just must be horrendous. So, yeah. So I was looking at Kate and going, oh, well, I can't do that, so I may as well just stay in the house. No point trying. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I think I don't know. With my daughter, I don't think I really did. I think I was so just like, whatever. But with Ihsan, I lost so much weight. I think within the first like 7-8 months, I'd lost about 25 kilos from just from breastfeeding and baby wearing. She was like a unit. Like, when she started, like, she, you know, she was solid and she would never go in the pushchair, and I'd only be able to baby wear her. And I lost so much weight. So I was like my best self. Like, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Let's get out on the town.
Like, who even are you? But with Talha. And it's funny because now I also have sort of like a semi, like a sort of somewhat social media presence. And I hate it because I'm like I haven't gained weight, but I haven't lost any. And I'm like, oh God. Like, now people see you, like strangers see you. And I felt a bit more pressure with him actually physically to kind of look like I was doing all right. But actually, now I'm just like, I just don't care. Like,
yeah, yeah. You've got to, you know, you've got to heal. My husband's a physio, so I'm quite lucky that he's encouraging me. He's like, you know, you've got to do some exercise. And I think some people would take offense to their husband telling them they needed to do some exercise, but I know it's actually him being like, you need to build yourself back up again.
Back up.
You know, it's all, it's things like my lower back I get problems with, and that's because I had diastasis recti after Jack, so I had issues there. So I know that muscularly and for my physical and mental well-being, that it's actually good to start getting back into, even just walking, getting the baby in the sling, doing some baby wearing, because it's such a good workout. Elevate that heart rate.
You said that and I'm like, oh yeah, pelvic floor exercises. So anyone who's listening, do your pelvic floor exercises.
Squeeze it now.
Just squeeze it now. Let's do it.
No.
Right. Oh, you'll thank me later.
Natural Mat are the sponsors of this series, makers of organic beds and mattresses since 1999. It's a great fit for us, as anyone who follows me online will know that I bloomin' love sleep. I wish I had more of it, and I bloomin' love a nap as well. So at Natural Mat, all of the key materials they use in their beds and mattresses come from natural, sustainable and renewable sources, even buying their organic wool from farms on their doorstep in the southwest. They make everything themselves by hand in their solar-powered Devon factory, and in 2020 their sustainability efforts were rewarded with a Queen's Award for Sustainable Development. They also recently launched their Mattress for Life initiative. So when your Natural Mat mattress reaches the end of its lifespan, you have three options: refurbish, recycle, or donate, ensuring a Natural Mat mattress never ends up in landfill. Don't Buy Her Flowers listeners can get 15% off their first Natural Mat order using the code DBHF15, either online or in their London, Devon, or Cotswold showroom.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently: Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And what about visitors? Because when I had my first two, well, especially my first, we had a kind of schedule. Like you, Sophie, I was the first of my friends. I was 29. We were the first to have a baby where we were living in London. And we would have like a two a day or two or three. There'd be slots a day. And I didn't plan for that, and I didn't think that that was going to happen. But then people would contact you, and they all want to be there in that first couple of weeks and see the baby. And it wasn't until I had my third, and I wrote a post called Pulling Up the Drawbridge, which has ended up being pretty well read. And I get messages, people, they've sent it on to people, because I realised I didn't need to do that. I didn't need to have visitors, because also I was giving to people at a time when I had nothing to get, you know, all my focus should have been on a baby.
Yeah. providing a charcuterie board for your friends come around and you haven't eaten in 3 days because you haven't had the time. But like, I've got to get the good biscuits. Got to get the good biscuits out for all the visitors. Yeah.
Did you have lots of visitors?
I did. Do you know what? I think you get less visitors per children you have. Yeah. So like the first kid's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. All the subsequent children just look like a version of the first and people aren't really that interested, are they? And I think from my daughter when she was born, I think when the neighbours just pushed a baby growth through the letterbox, didn't bother knocking on.
Amazing.
I can hear it from here, love. I know you've had her. There you go. It's on those people like that. And actually, that's fine. But yeah, it is. And people do, they want to come, they want to sniff your baby's head, and which I always found really weird because I always just think that, you know, that smell that everyone goes, oh, that's amazing, is actually just your insides, isn't it? If you think about it, that's just what that smell is. Like, okay, you do you, but you're just smelling my vag, but that's fine. Enjoy, get a good whiff. and you get your first couple of weeks and that's fine, but then it very quickly just it tapers off, doesn't it? I don't think anyone's come to see me bar my parents, and that's only because I needed them for childcare while I worked in months now. So and you know what, it's fine, I get it, it's less exciting, but also the effort that you have to go to provide for them, I'm happy to take a step back from that. I'm good.
I live with my sister and her children, and it was her husband as well who also passed away not long ago. So it was, you know, two families living together, and we both got two children, and they basically pulled up my drawbridge. So they were just like, we've got you. Like, the only people I'd want to be here would be my sister, and then my other two sisters basically live here as well. So it's like, they're the only people I'd actually need. And so it was really easy, but I'm part of quite a big Muslim community in Norwich. And so at about 6 weeks, we had what we call a milky pudding, which is like where we'll have like a sweet semolina rice, and everyone will have some of that rose water, and like, it's gross. I don't like it. Some people really like it. And it's like you have like a tiny little bowl, whatever, just to like share for like wedding the baby's head kind of thing. And so we then had like 30 people come over, but all at one time. And then it was like, bye. Like, you know, that's it. So you kind of did it all and you're exhausted. Good. But then it's like, we're just celebrating.
Out the way.
You, and then you're done.
Yeah, nice. I like that.
Yeah. And then when he was 6 months old, we had what's known as an akika, which is basically like a christening. And then there were like a couple of hundred people. But again, it was one day. And then you go, everyone celebrates you. And it's like, all right, then I'll go to bed. So actually, it's quite nice. And visitors came, but they would literally, like in those early days, it was food just being dropped off. So my sisters had arranged for different people to cook for about 4 weeks.
That's what you actually need.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 4 weeks. There were meals all the time. They were dropped off at the door. No one came in. No one held the baby. It was nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And we also, I didn't with Ihsan, but with Talha, I did 40 days where I just didn't really leave the house. I went for a walk, but he did essentially, bar going to the osteopath, 40 days of just being indoors and just being with me or held by like immediate family. And that honestly, if you have the ease to do that, and I did have it because Omar could take Ihsan to nursery and I've got a garden, I could be outside. Mm-hmm. But like, it changed my whole postnatal experience because I actually just was like, oh, I'm just going to sit here and scroll Instagram and watch things and nap and be looked after. Yeah. And it's just that 40 days of just like, okay, cool. Now I'm ready to face the world. And it really did feel like a smoother transition. So if you have the capacity to, even if you did 5 days or whatever, but days that are just dedicated to you resting, eating, being.
Which makes complete sense. Like, it's like your body has just done this massive thing. Your brain, your identity, everything feels a bit screwy. There, but then you're meant to be out and about and in some sort of
function. With your face on, looking all good and fine, that you're coping. No.
And like most people have to do the school run like a couple of days later. And like, I think you
can ask for help as well. Like, I think, I know you talk about it takes a village and that, but with the first two, I wouldn't have asked for help. I didn't even really kind of say, like, Mom, I need you. I'd be like, no, I'll save that for when I really need it.
Well,
like, I don't want to be a burden. And then with my third, because I really consciously was like, right, I've got to do this differently because this did not work with the first two. And there was a bit of a gap between two and three. So I was like, I asked for help, or I'd say, right, someone's doing the school run. Can you pick up my kids? Or, and people want to help, but you kind of need to give them specifics, don't you? Because otherwise they're like, can I help? and then you're like, oh, yeah. I can't.
Let me know if you need anything.
Yeah, that doesn't work. Yeah. We know that. That's not it.
Or really unhelpful help. Well, they'll come and then they'll just sit in your kitchen. Then you'll like run around making them cups of tea and like making them lunch and sandwiches. And you're like, oh, they're just holding your baby, but you're still running around doing everything. Yeah. Anything else? Like, no, I want to go to sleep for 2 hours while you hold my baby, make your own sandwiches. So,
And also, you know, if you don't have any family around you, you can get a doula, a postnatal doula, and you're like, come in, and you know, twice a week, just tidy up or hold the baby or let me shower or make me snacks or whatever. But you know, you save up the money and you kind of, if you're gonna, rather than getting the kind of top of the range pushchair, you take that money and you go, do you know what? Actually, I'm going to use it for this. Or if people ask you for gifts, like I have people who gift debriefs, birth debriefs to their friends as their baby shower gifts. They're like, just go talk about your birth. And because it doesn't have to be traumatic, it's just somewhere for you to just offload or get advice or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, these are important gifts in order to nurture us. Like, how can you feel better?
Yeah.
There you go. So doulas, meal plans. Don't buy her flowers came from.
Well, because, and it was originally, it was gifts for new mums. And it was because I had my first baby. I got about eight or more bunches of flowers. I worked in marketing. So it'd be like this big, the agency sending these like beautiful, all really well intended, because it was a gift for me rather than for the baby. So, but you're just sitting there going, oh my God, like I can't look after those.
Something
like,
else to keep alive.
And we do, like, you can have cook vouchers in our store. Yeah. And it's all about TLC. Like that's what you actually need. It's and I think sometimes, like with the visitors thing, when I posted that a few years ago, I had the funniest, I mean awful, but funniest messages from people, where the families that had turned up, people with suitcases, but one that really stuck in my mind was a mother-in-law who turned up and parked outside the house, and the mum of the baby was like, yeah, do you want to come in? She's like, no, I'm only coming in when my son's there, because I want to be with him and be the first person to hold the baby. But he'd gone to the shops or something. Oh. So this woman is like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what are you? And she's parked outside the house for like a couple of hours. Like, no, my, because in her vision of meeting her grandchild.
Yeah, how she wanted it to go.
And you're like, this isn't about you. Like, the boundaries thing is probably, again, I think the number of things I did with a small baby, like going to big events that you didn't want to go to, that someone's invited you to, or, you know, like drag. And like, no, you need to be able to say no. But I suppose you need to have a think about that and a talk with your partner before to go, I know that wedding that's 2 weeks after we've had a baby, it might not be the right thing to do, or whatever it is.
Absolutely not. No. I mean, I'm not even doing baby groups this time around. I've just said categorically, I'm not doing them. They used to stress the life out of me trying to get the others to them. We'd always be late. I'd always turn up like the last 20 minutes after, you know, everybody had done all their rhythm and rhyme sessions. Always turn up late for them, just in time to get the shit juice and a stale biscuit that nobody just thinks on to put in the tin. Like, come on, Janet, put them in a tin, save them for next time.
Do you know, it's interesting because I actually cannot stand a baby group. Like, I can't.
No.
I can't Jump stand it. The angst. I can't stand the kind of just staring at each other across the room to be like, want to be friends? No, we don't want to be friends. Okay, let's just look at our babies.
And you don't know any of the songs. I sing like Pitbull to my kids. I don't sing like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. I'm like, it's going down. Yelling timber at them. I don't know anything.
But also, like, to do what you would do in the comfort of your home in a public place, it just sounds like a bit of a ball ache. And the baby's like, oh, I'm going to sleep now.
Sleep,
or I'm just going to crawl off in that direction, or I'm not bothered. So I was like, no, I'm not doing baby groups. But I'm very much about like getting mums together and how we can have a better experience.
Because you do need some contact.
You do.
With other people.
You do. Yeah. Like, you have to be able to be like, I can leave when I want to. Yeah. Like, it's not between the hours of 10 and 11 and you got to stay or be on time.
Yeah.
But I started these like mother circle socials here in Norwich because I was like, just come join us. We're just going to have cake and tea and talk. I did the first one a couple of weeks ago and it was like speed dating. People just moving around the room, just like chatting, whatever. But it was like we were all just united through the fact that we were mothering and that was it. And it was amazing. And I think actually they shouldn't be baby groups. They should be mother groups.
Mother groups, for sure.
Baby groups. Babies are cool, especially second and third babies. They've got siblings. They are
fine.
It's
like the massage where you go and you take a 3 week old for a massage, and they're just lying. They don't know what's going on.
You need the massage. Like, take my baby, massage me. Like, I'm cool.
Yeah, I did. The only one that I did that I actually quite enjoyed with my eldest, we did baby sign language.
Yeah.
And he actually learned how to sign mummy before he could say it. So I think it was tapping of his head. So he used to tap his head for mummy, and he did duck as well. So he did mummy and duck. I was like, see, Steve, it was totally worth the hundreds of pounds that we've spent.
Yeah. When you have to buy a term of classes, you end up going to probably 3 out of 8.
Yeah, you do. Well, yeah. Just can't be bothered. Yeah.
Well, actually, I saw your post, Sophie, where you ordered some thank you cards that just really made me chuckle. It really made me chuckle. Oh. Go on.
Well, do you know what? I was so proud of myself, Steph, because I don't do things like this. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to get ahead of the curve. I always feel... You know, when people give you a gift and you say thank you at the time, and then I always go, oh, but should I send a card? But I've said thank you to their face. I said thank you at the time. Do I still, how long do I need to continue saying thank you for the baby grow that they gave me? But so I thought, don't you want this time? I'm going to be really organized, and I'm going to get one of these lovely, like, beautiful black and white pictures of my baby with his name on the front, date of birth. So I went on, did it online, and I saw on the back there was a blurb that just said, you know, like, oh, thank you so much for your kind gifts and beautiful words for the birth of our son. I thought, perfect. I don't actually then have to write anything on the back. I can just be super lazy and just deal them out at the school ground when I see people. Don't even need to write on them. And so I ordered them. They came. They cost me like 50 quid for these bloody cards. My husband was like, how much? I was like, I know, but look, they're arty. And then we turned them over, and it had this beautiful blurb about thank you for your beautiful kind words and wishes for our baby boy. And then it said, with love from Peter and Maria Smith.
I was like,
who the fuck is Peter and Maria Smith? I was like, who are these people? So I just hadn't seen the bit that I had to then autocorrect myself. Couldn't send them back because it was my mistake. And then I couldn't then give them out. My husband was like, well, no, we're giving them out. You spent 50 quid on them. We'll just have to cross them out. So we ended up just having to cross out Peter and Maria Smith.
Even better.
And then, right, AKA Sophie and Steve, Sophie with baby brain. But I thought, we can't even put them away, you know, as a little keepsake for him from when he's older, because when we're dead and he's going through all of our belongings.
Who the fuck are my parents?
Who am I? He's going to have this existential crisis that maybe he was adopted.
I love it.
Tell him. Oh my God, that was just the best case of trying to do something when you postpartum and you really shouldn't be thinking.
Yeah.
Just don't recommend that. Don't recommend.
What about relationships in those first weeks? I just felt very angry at Doug. And actually, after each child, it wasn't like it was just with the first one. Just that rage I felt. Yeah. How about you girls?
Yeah.
So the first time, I think, like, I didn't really have anything to compare it to necessarily. And it was like more just like this idea of how I'd seen others behave. And so I'd be like, yeah, of course. You know, I was very much ticking boxes of generic behavior rather than applying them to my exact situation. It was very much like, you should be doing this and you should be doing that and you should be doing the other. And actually that didn't work, like, and that wasn't us. And so it actually ended up causing more resentment, more arguments. And it was like, that was so stupid, like, you should never have done it like that. And so with our son, he wasn't even there at the birth. So came obviously like the moment he was born, he was just upstairs looking after our daughter. I came down the moment he was born, whatever. But that start made such a difference, because it was like, now I have like expectations that are applicable to you. And that really helped to prevent the anger in those first few weeks, because then it was like, he didn't basically, and I think you can do this with subsequent children. It was like, you are her guy. Like, you need to do everything for her so that I don't have to. So his hyper focus was on her. I was like, well, this baby only really wants me anyway, so whatever. And my sisters were here, as I said before, so it was fine. But later on, now that this child is nearly one, I'm like, are you fucking joking? Can you fucking tell? Like, I'm like, the anger is just like, now I find it more annoying, because I'm like, I now have two that I have to deal with, And I'm feeling like sometimes this load isn't necessarily very balanced. And so I think a lot of the conversation starts around that initial, how it impacts your relationship, which is definitely like an atomic bomb.
Yeah.
But then the later, the kind of the niggling kind of persistent irritations that happen, like, how many times do I need to ask you to just get the kids to bed? Like, it's bedtime. Why are you playing? Like, you know what time? Like all of these kind of things. And the impact that that then has, and also just the build up of the exhaustion, like maternal exhaustion from like showing up. And when you've got two children of different ages or more, as you all know, they've got different needs, and you're trying to meet those needs and trying to meet your partner's needs as well, and your own, which are like wherever they are. And the resentment definitely does build, because you no longer have the adrenaline that you were running on in the beginning. Your hormones are like pissing about. Your period's back, you've got a thing going back to work or whatever, you feel crap in yourself, and the person you can take it out on is your partner. So
yeah. How about you, Sophie?
For us, having our third baby was a bit of a kind of, my husband wasn't as keen. I mean, now he's here, he's like absolutely besotted, but for him, his main concern was actually what it would do to us, because remembering the struggle with having two kids quite close in age together and how little time that we had for each other. And now, you know, mine are near 10 and 7, and they're just at a completely different stage of life. And they're brilliant. You know, they'll go out to their mates for a sleepover. They'll, you know, they're so independent. And, you know, apart from, you know, messing around at bedtime like they all do, it's life is, you know, was easy up until the point
same.
And then found out I was pregnant. And so for him, there was a real concern as to what that might be like. And I think this time round, I'm very hyper aware of that, because we'd had the conversation beforehand about whether, you know, to go for the third or not. And I promised, I was like, no, it's going to be different this time. And now he's here, I'm like, fuck off, don't touch me. But what I am doing this time round is, I think I'm explaining myself as I go. So I'm explaining my thought process to him, and I'm kind of trying to put his mind at ease. And I'm saying, I'm not always going to be like this. It's not always going to be like this. And, you know, if you actually think about how long your children are that small for, and that, you know, irritating occasionally, and that, you know, that needy for me especially, it's actually such a small time in comparison to the rest of their lives. And I'm like, you know what, you just need to bed down. I won't always be like this. I won't always not want to be touched. I won't always snap your head off. It is just a phase. And I think as long as you communicate that to them, and, you know, they get it and they take it on board, I think I think you've just got to be open and honest about it and say, do you know what, today I hate you, no offense.
I had this thing, like, when you're talking about communication, I'm like, exactly. And I created this postpartum conversation starter card, so postpartum relationship conversation starter cards, and they just flew. Like, people were buying them. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And all they are is, they're literally just like one sentence of like, are you okay? What are your needs? How can I support you? You know, because when you're in it, when you're mothering or whatever, you don't even think. And like you're saying, like, you don't even tell them why you're like this or what's going on. And they often don't tell you. They're just like, oh, do you know what? I'm pissed off. I'm just going to go off, or I'm going to whatever. And it manifests with them in different ways. And so you end up kind of moving like ships in the night, like you're not talking. And then it was like, there was one woman who messaged me, and she was like, it saved my marriage. Like, we were never having these conversations. And then I literally took out one card and I asked him a question, and it opened up so many things.
I think we're just not prepared for it, because maybe as well, people previously just didn't really talk about it, or expectations between men and women were different. So it was like, you know, it has changed massively from like our parents' generation, where probably mum was mum and dad went out and earned money, like, and now
and everyone just put up and shut up, and
so it doesn't mean that they're necessarily having a great time, but they didn't have an expectation. Whereas my expectations on Doug are so different. So my mum will be like, oh, dad was great. He would get up in the night, or he would change a baby. I'm like, that's fair.
It's meant to.
So I think that has a massive part to play in that.
And I think sometimes we get annoyed about having to mansplain. Like, it's like, why do I have to break this down for you? Why can't you just figure it out? Why can't you just see that this needs to be done without me having to, like, because we're already having to handhold the children. Like, we're like, I thought me and you were the adults and they're the children. And yet here I am having to explain to you that I need you to tidy up behind yourself. Well, I don't fancy doing that. But when you don't fancy doing that, it ends up building this frustration. And then when they try and come, you know, that tap on the shoulder in the middle of the night, they're kind of like, hey, that one. And you're like, no, because the resentment towards you has been building all freaking day and I can't stand you near me. Thank you, bye.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's that, like, we want them to understand and they just don't understand. And I don't think that's something that we can blame ourselves for, because equally they know that we want them to understand, so they could try as well. So it goes both ways.
I think as well with guys, I think, you know, for me, Nate is very clingy to me. I you know, he's, I am, like you were saying before, Ellie, like, for a very small stage, you know, you are all a baby once. Like, I've, especially because I'm breastfeeding him, I am literal life to him. And, you know, and I think actually he feels a bit on the outside as well of that. And, you know, it's as much as, you know, I can joke about, oh, he doesn't do anything. He's actually very handy. He's very good. He does all the washing. I'm probably the rubbish one in the relationship. I never think to put the wash on. He's always there doing the washing and whatnot. So he's really helpful at that. But, you know, there's certain things, I think, because he feels like he's on the outside and that he can't do anything because I'm breastfeeding. You know, there's that quick assumption of that everything has to fall on me, but because of that. So, you know, like, he'll hold him and the minute he starts crying, it's like,
oh, it's... He needs
feeding. I'm like, he doesn't need feeding. He doesn't. I fed him half an hour ago. He just needs jigging. Or, you know, it's the trying to also kind of bite your tongue and let them also figure it out for themselves.
Well, and they're probably going to do it slightly differently as well, right?
Yeah.
And
then I mean, they're going to do it wrong, but still.
Yeah. But sometimes it's like having to accept that they're doing it differently is quite hard.
And you do actually know, like, sometimes I sit there and I watch my husband. I'm like, I have to look at my sister. I'm like, don't let me say anything. Don't let me say anything. Yeah. Because I'm watching him. I'm like, eventually he's going to get to what I know works. He's going to have to work through it. And it's just good. You know, like, I'll be like, why is he holding him like that? Why is he holding him? That doesn't work. And after he's like flipped him upside down and spun him around, he's like, oh, put him over my shoulder. And then he thinks it's his idea. But if he thinks it's his idea, it's like, he'll do it again though, won't he then? So it's fine. Yes. If I then try and like micromanage, he'll be like, just do it then, you do it. But instead, if he thinks that he's been successful, he might just keep doing
just
it.
Just do it next time. See, if I try to micromanage, I just send my husband the other way. So we fell out last night because, you know what they're like, babies, they scream, you pick them up and they stop. Or, you know, that's what, you know, you've got to do the jig, you've got to walk, you can't sit down and jig, doesn't work. You need to be on your feet with the jig. And so we were screaming his head off and I was like, Steve, I was like, just pick him up. And he was like, no, because he couldn't be bothered getting out of bed. He was like, I'll have him in the bed, it's fine. I was like, you need to get out of the bed. And he was like, no, don't come in here telling me how to parent, of what to do, you know, don't. And because I was telling him to stand up and jig, he was like, no, I'm absolutely not going to do that. I'm going to stay in this bed. 5 minutes later, he was up pacing the floor jigging and the crying stopped immediately. And I was like,
those middle of the night, like, rages. And you have to just pretend that those don't happen, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, because it's when they wake up in the morning and they say, oh, he had a good night's sleep, didn't he? Yeah. They've been up every hour. I'm like, how did you hear? I just don't understand what it is in their brainwaves that they just don't. I mean, it's impressive. I would like to know. I would like
so
to know
you
how.
Can do it.
Yeah. So I can do it. It's very impressive.
And what would you like to say to a new mum who might be feeling all of the things that we've talked about, Sophie?
That it doesn't last forever, I think, probably is what I would say. That no matter kind of how, like, down you might feel on one day, or how much you feel that you can't leave the house, or that things are on top of you, your tomorrow will be different, because every day is different, and this stage, it doesn't last forever. And also that everybody else goes through it as well, that you're not alone, and things will get better, because they do. And, you know, I look back at some of the earlier years that I've had with my other two now, and they are a distant memory, and at the time I would have just been beside myself about certain things. And I always say that, you know, I put a lot of humour into what I do, because if I don't, then I would just cry about it. And I think, you know, once you've looked back at it and you look objectively of what happened and you go, oh, do you know what? Actually, it's fine. It's fine. So that's the dogs going.
Illy?
So mine would be that despite the fact that babies don't recognise that you are separate entities for a very long time, you actually are separate entities. And so what you are doing, or anything that you do, or anything that your baby does, is not you. It's not a reflection of you on how you parent, how you don't parent, what you do, what you don't do. It is just, they are individual beings. And so as much as you want to be like, it's my fault they're doing this, it's like, actually, step back for a minute. They're an individual. They're a whole person. And they might be acting this way or doing this thing, but actually, it's not going to be your fault because you are two separate beings. Yeah. And so, you know, all the things that you want to blame yourself for, have a look at it. Like, ask yourself, is it mine to carry, or are they just a baby? Are they a whole person who's got their own characters, likes, dislikes? And so, yeah, just you are together in it, but you are separate beings, and they'll do what they do. And all we can do is facilitate the space for them to be. And I think that is what we should be doing. And that's what we always should aim to be doing for their whole lives. We're just facilitating them to be themselves.
Oh, I like that. And what not to say would be cherish every moment, because...
Some of them aren't cherishable.
No, and that's the worst. It just makes you feel so guilty when you're there pulling your hair out. And they're
like, so-and-so's done it. You know, comparison really is the thief of all joy. We're all on different journeys, different experiences, different expectations. So whatever.
Yeah.
Bin it.
There you go. Thank you so much to Illy and Sophie. And I think my conclusion is that none of us know what we're doing. My eldest is 12. I almost can't remember going through all of that with him, and I started Don't Buy Her Flowers because I found it so hard and overwhelming. So you can see how people forget. We work with the charity Homestart UK, who have a local community network of trained volunteers and expert support, and they help families with young children going through challenging times. So I will put a link in the notes, as they may be able to help you if you're struggling. And thank you so much for listening. I think lots of people are finding life quite tough at the moment. There's a lot of bad and sad news to process, and we're dealing with the fallout of the last few years, and life is busy and overwhelming. So I'm hoping to tackle some of that in our next series. If you subscribe to the podcast, you'll get a notification when we release a new episode. And there's all of last year's episodes, so go back and listen to those. That should keep you busy. And we'll be back soon. Take care of yourselves.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.